some introduction of my background has already kind of been done. And what am I going to talk about? I'm going to talk about this case of study, which is Battery Park City, New York, and it's the base of my PhD dissertation. So just finished it in June 2012. So today, instead of just introducing you a history of the background, I will try to introduce you some kind of reasoning. And as I'm eager to receive your feedback, comments, and in other words, learn from you to guess. So, very quickly outlining how the lecture today is going to be carried on. So we'll have three different phases of the lecture. In the first one, I'll try to introduce you the reasons and the key questions that have driven me to carry on this research. In the second part, we will take care of the case study, and you guys know the case study because you're here, so it's Battery Park City neighborhood in New York. And in the third one, I'll try to introduce you the resource. To me, I would like to say that it's always hard for a research to say whether you came to a resource or not. And usually, time plays a key role in this. So what I'll try to do today, I will try to introduce you my results as some kind of open issues that I will be glad to discuss with you during the question time. As Socrates, that is a philosopher from the ancient Greek that lived in the 5th century before Christ, said, the only true wisdom is knowing that you know nothing. So I'll try to share with you today. So very quickly to reasons and key questions. One of the starting points for my research is actually another research that has been carried on by North Carolina State University and University of Georgia, which shows that between 2005 and 2010, for the first time in the history of human being, the number of people residing in urban areas has overtaken the number of people residing in rural areas, and it's an historic change that never occurred in the history of human beings before. Not only that, it's a very fast changing. It happens very quickly. So the study forecasts that this gap will increase very rapidly. And in 2030, the world population living in urban areas will rise over 60%. So, quoting Ronald Wingley and Levi Morris, responsible for the research, the future of humanity is fundamentally urban. So there are three main issues related to this phenomena that have been highlighted in this research and that I would like to share with you today. So the first one is where. It's a fast process that involves all modern societies, from the most advanced one to those who are still in developing process. So the second point is when. It's very hard to say when, but I just decided to outline a data that I take from the Chinese Academy of Social Science. And according to that, 80% of the national population in China will reside in major cities of the country by 2050. And urbanization is nowadays still the third economic development engine of the country. So the third point, and last, is how. Well, as described by William Morris, it's the urbanization process in the case of Western metropolis can be said to be basically complete. And urban renewal is due to the substantial functional and structural obsolescence or modification in the future to be faced in populated areas. But in developing countries, it's different. It is to engage a delicate balancing exercise, a balancing that will take into account a system capable of treasuring the kaleidoscopic experience that took part in a European and North American urban history. But in the meantime, it needs to be balanced in order to protect and potentially bring out the distinctive local peculiarities of the areas. So, try to summing up the main results of this research. We can say that this change is unavoidable in a process. It's relentless in its acceleration. It's global in its scale, and it's global in its specific phenomena. How to face such a radical change? I'm sorry to say, my friends, but I have no answer for that. But what I can do today is try to share a reasoning. And my background, my cultural background, has shown me that looking to the past is always helpful to find answers. And I'll try to get a little bit metaphorical in this stage, and I would like to share with you two quotes that I like the most. One is from a French poet of the early 19th century that says that history teaches everything, including the future. And the second one is from Long Bolingbroke, that is a man living in Britain during the 18th century, and says that history is philosophy teaching by example and also by learning. Why to make these quick two quotations? Because I would like to stress out the importance to me to look back to a successful example, real example rather than a theoretical one, that could lead us the pathway to the future. So, what successful example can we look at? Again, it's hard to say, but we can take some quotation from people that actually know better than I do. And two of them are Lance J. Brown, David Dixon, and Oliver Gibbon, that says that in urban design, and those examples that have revealed themselves as successful are those that include the values of multidisciplinary, social inclusion, economic, social, and environmental exploitation. Or with the words of Peter Blake, we could say that those case studies that reveal themselves successful in time are those who show that build three-dimensional models that us, as landscape designer and urban designer, are capable to project into the fourth dimension of space-time. So when I selected battery park as a revealing example, I thought that these values were all included in it. As David Gordon said, by 1996, battery park was generally regarded as one of the most successful examples of urban redevelopment. And it has the capability of balancing a triumph in the urban design as well as a triumph in the finance. And that is the main reason, to sum up, why I decided to make some investigation on the case study. So where is Battery Park? Battery Park is a neighbor located in Manhattan West downtown. And it's an artificial area overlooking the former World Trade Center. Let's give some basic data about this neighborhood. It occupies 92 acres, which is about 0.37 square kilometers. It has a population of almost 8,000 people and a density of 4,100 people per square kilometer. So, till the mid-20th century, it was dedicated to harbor function. But as happened in many different areas, the containerization revolution and the consequence of the infrastructure of the oceans determined the displacement of such functions. So the construction of the World Trade Center provided a significant quantity of soil for this artificial landfill to be produced. But I don't think it's the main one on this. What is interesting to me is that in the American pragmatic approach is the timeline of this transformation, because it lasts from 1958 to 2011. So it's a very long time in a country where usually this kind of transformation is very short. So we have a first stage from 1958 to 1975 where lots of projects have been proposed but nothing has been built. And the financial crisis of 1975 had just wiped out all this project, and a radical change in the approach from 1979 to 2011 has actually given the possibility to build all the neighborhood. And why the first stage of this project has failed? The main reason I've shown here, and we can say that in general, all of this one that I've just stated, and you can see, like, you know, the methodology of philosophy, like over-inclusive design, insufficient coordination, self-referential approach, and predominance of public funding have been the main reasons for the first stage of the project to not to be capable to build anything.
Yeah. This is just a few images from the projects in the first phase of the Battery Park. So this is a proposal from the Army. An error from the Department of Marine Aviation, is the same one from Germany. This is one from New York State, one from the municipality, one from the state and municipality.
Yeah, all of them, you know, as the process is so long in time, they show like deep change in the social culture and the cultural reverence. But all of them would be just wiped out. So coming quickly to the second part, to the second phase. We can say that there is a radical change of strategy that is the one that we are interested in, and that can be analyzed. And the transformation is intended as a strategy, as an intermediate scale between planning and design in a shared pragmatist approach. So to sum it up very quickly, I will just quote the two main designers for the Battery Park City project, the one that has actually been developed, which are Alexander Cooper and Stan Nexton. And to us, I think one of the aspects that makes most interest this case of study is the approach to the multi-purpose street, seen as the prime organizing element, and the fact that architectural proposals need to reflect surrounding conditions. So today, Battery Park City is just a multifunctional neighborhood where we can find residential, commercial, hotels, schools, museums. So it's a mix of function and social and cultural. So there are four main areas in the actual project and that I'm going to introduce you chronologically. But above all, it is interesting for me to underline that in this fourth area there is a very close linkage between the real estate development and the design and development of public space and parks. So these are the four main areas: the World Financial Plaza and Esplanade, the Rector Park, the South Pole River Wagner Park. Each one of these has a related public space and park design. And this is the full one, the Gordon Rockefeller Park. Why is it so important, the landscape design in Battery Park City? Well, the geo of the Battery Park City has already explained it to us. And it says that they invested in good landscape design because we know it's really common. And Battery Park in space design means higher real estate values and larger income flow to the public as well to the private sector. So there are four main issues and points that are related to the landscape design in Battery Park City that are shared by all the parks and public space design and that I would like to share this with you today. So all of them actually express the key importance of investigation and inquiring the requests and the needs expressed by the users. And all the projects have a more and more a bottom-up strategy. And I would say that their projects are really based on participatory process that include both residents from the Battery Park City as well as from the surrounding area. So investigating the real requests and needs of the people is one of the big of success. The second one is integration. So the public space design is the building complex. And it's a coherent spatial arrangement. And it shows functional inclusion and a unitary image of the outdoor design. And the simplistic zoning is not considered to be a satisfactory approach to the transformation anymore. I'll just take a few words because I had the chance to take part to a consultancy during my stay here in Colombia, and I've had the chance to see how many times, I mean, at least in the case that I had the chance to take part to, there is no relation between real estate developments and landscape and public space design. I don't think this is a way. I don't think that this can be a successful approach. But I think that integration, as shown in my research, is truly the key to offer successful landscape and public space design. No dividing between real estate and design, but trying to mix it up together, trying to talk together between them. The active use is another key point to the success. So it's interaction between people and public space. And this once again requires some kind of mediation between those areas that are meant to be multi-purpose ones to those that are specialized. But in general, what has shown some positive results in the Battery Park case
is a strategy that is more oriented on the quality of infrastructure rather than on the achievements of some kind of fancy design, as we've seen many times in the last decade. The fourth is time awareness. The time issue is considered by designers in battery park city both in the short and in the long term developed. So in the short one, what they consider is the need of a 24/7 use, and they achieve this kind of success by functional needs, social needs, and cultural needs. And in the long time, they knew that it's keys to the success to offer high standard performance during decades. And this is offered through an attention to project flexibility and local design language and background. And these two aspects are considered strongly related. The success of one is neutral to the other. These are four points that are more related to the landscape and public space design in this case. But before concluding, I would like to share with you four general points that I've actually, they can somehow represent my ongoing results of my research. As I mentioned to you before, to me results is it's an open issue. It's not something that is closed. So my hope is to have the chance to get more inquiry during my academic career in this aspect. So the first aspect that I would like to share with you is the urban quality and urban model versus, I call it urban model versus architectural design. The experience of Battery Park shows how urban quality is more determined by choice of urban model rather than architectural design, relying more on systemic vision than on single solution. The model requires a discrete number of straightforward rules, discrete number, simple rules, not simplistic. And they are closely related to the aspect of local urban tradition, and it's for the urban and landscape designers to find and redefine them, taking into account the change led by temporal context. Number two, design flexibility in today as a four-dimensional issue. It's evident in Battery Park City as the significant flexibility is a value to be achieved in a three spatial dimension and in the fourth one, and rather than in a single building and in a single architectural design. Number three, the ground level, which is the one that truly may interest the most us. So the ground level in the urban design, the use value versus the exchange value, as is mentioned in Marxist philosophy. In Battery Park City project, there are, so looking back to the modernist idea, it confers the relevance in reviving the ground level in urban design. In other words, the public space are enhanced as a social spatial primary area of reality in the city. In the case of study, the use value as the custom and social practice appears to be more crucial than the exchange value as a prescriptive urban planning standard. This experience specified unequivocally a clear position to be discussed in a wide scenario. In the Battery Park City, the urban transformation meant by designer will always opt for spaces based on a plurality of function, perhaps in small scale and low financial impact, instead of more extensive and single function header based on uncertain sustainability. And this is a case that we see in many developing countries nowadays. And the number four, to conclude my lecture, is a will, and it's a hope for me. And it's the will and the hope for a new operational integration between theory and practice. Battery Park City experience suggests a maximum cooperation and integration between traditionally separated disciplines and actors, both in the theory and in the practice. So designers, both urban, architectural, landscape, developers, and government officers need to increase their ability to interact with all multiple levels characterizing these operations that is actually offering answers. So our role, this despite neither being the promoter in this kind of operation, because actually promotion usually comes from development goals, neither the final decisioner, which is always made by the government, we are the ones that can provide the tools and the proposal and the solution to the complex network of developers and governments that will give answers. Thank you.